Welcome to the daily VFN radio highlights at VFNTV.com. Enjoy. You're about to hear a speech done by President Barack Obama in Israel, and we're listening to it live to us. And so you're going to hear our emotions. You're going to hear us hear some pretty awesome things in the beginning. We're going to get really excited. But as the speech continues, hold on. I know, because you've probably already heard the speech already, but you're listening to us live as we're hearing it. And what he was saying was so good in the beginning. We were shocked to hear the betrayal of Israel to the United Nations. I mean, you've got to hear it, but just give us grace and understand as we're listening to this, this is live to us. And so if we, knowing what we're going to share with you towards the end of his speech, are feeling that way, you can imagine people who don't know God or don't know what's already been revealed that you're going to hear in the speech. So you're going to hear us be amazed at what's shared, but you're going to hear us be shocked at how it ends up. Join us now as we listen live to us, the president's speech in Israel. The president, we want to get right into this because it is a speech, first of all, that we anticipated and leaned on the edges of our seats to find out what was going to be said, because the President Obama's first time ever being in Israel is just right now, and since he's been president, and he's going and befriending openly Israel, and he's speaking well of Israel, that Israel has a right to exist, a right to their own nation, a right to peace, and some of the things you're going to hear in the speech, and we're going to talk about it as we play, but you got to hear, we want you to hear his speech. And from time to time, we'll just kind of give you a biblical perspective that we can about, just because things sound good or sound bad, for example, we got to look at God's word. What does God's word say about that? And there is some pretty powerful moments that you can never take back. You know what I'm saying? You know, the way that the devil does not want God's people praised, acknowledged, and talk positive about in any way, form, or fashion,
right?
Especially from the most powerful nation, in the world, outside of Israel, and so we want to go right into. He's speaking at a university in Israel.
In Israel,
right? And we want to be able to hear.
Thank you.
Again, this is the President of the United States speaking yesterday in Israel.
Shalom. Thank you so much. Thank you very much. Thank you. Everybody, please have a seat. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much. Well, it is a great honor to be with you here in Jerusalem. And I'm so grateful for the welcome that I've received from the people of Israel. Thank you.
I want to tell you that the volume from this feed coming from whitehouse.gov, it's a little low, so you may have to turn your volumes up a little bit here. Listen up. This is the president in Israel yesterday.
I bring with me the support of the American people. And the friendship that binds us together. You know, over the last 2 days, I've reaffirmed the bonds between our countries with Prime Minister Netanyahu and President Peres. I've borne witness to the ancient history of the Jewish people at the Shrine of the Book. And I've seen Israel's shining future in your scientists and your entrepreneurs. This is a nation of museums and patents, timeless holy sites, groundbreaking innovation. Only in Israel could you see the Dead Sea Scrolls and the place where the technology on board the Mars rover originated at the same time.
That's just an amazing moment when the president is praising, because that's the reality, how blessed Israel is, that they're the ones that invented such technology that today we're all benefiting from. And the fact that the Dead Sea Scrolls, which represents the Word of God, being given, and and how God's blessed it. Now the Land Rover at Mars, that God's doing that.
Wow.
Isn't that amazing?
That's cool. Beautiful.
Listen up.
But what I've most looked forward to is the ability to speak directly to you, the Israeli people, especially so many young people who are here today. To talk about the history that brought us here today and the future that you will make in the years to come. Now, I know that in Israel's vibrant democracy, every word, every gesture is carefully scrutinized. But I want to clear something up just so you know. Any drama between me and my friend Bibi over the years was just a plot to create material for Eretz Nehederet. That's the only thing that was going on.
He's talking about local media just stirring things up so they can sell papers, it appears. But those that are listening, this is the president's speech in Israel yesterday. Mm. And we're going to be talking about it, but listen up. He's reaffirming his relationship here with the prime minister of Israel. He's just saying, listen, that's not all that stuff that was said. That's not who we are to each other. But listen up.
We just wanted to make sure the writers had good material. I also know that I've come to Israel on the eve of a sacred holiday, the celebration of Passover. And that is where I would like to begin today. Just a few days from now, Jews here in Israel and around the world will sit with family and friends at the Seder table and celebrate with songs, wine, and symbolic foods. After enjoying Seders with family and friends in Chicago and on the campaign trail, I'm proud that I've now brought this tradition into the White House. And I did so because I wanted my daughters to experience the Haggadah and the story at the center of Passover that makes this time of year so powerful.
That's really huge. So what he's saying is that he and his family are celebrating the Seder dinner, the Passover. And Passover is, you know, when Israel was held captive by Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
And God was going to free them. And but God wanted to show himself mighty. He brought Moses in. And Moses would speak to the leader of Egypt, Pharaoh. And Pharaoh's heart was hardened and he never would let them go. So 10 plagues came. Mm-hmm. To show himself mighty, because he was showing himself to Israel too as well.
Mm-hmm.
But all of a sudden, in the last one was going to come where death was going to come to the firstborn. Death was going to come to the firstborn, everyone's child. But if they took the blood, of a spotless lamb, that was a young lamb that didn't have any blemishes or anything, they would take it into their house that night. These were their orders. And take some blood from it and put it over the doorpost of their house, that when the death came, when the death angel would come, they would look at the blood on the doorpost of the house and they would just pass over that house.
That's right.
That's what that means, Passover. Mm. So death passed over. And that's the awesome thing about Jesus. When you give your life to God through his son, Jesus Christ, and accept Jesus and make him the Lord of your life, and you become a follower of Jesus, understand that when death that we deserve comes our way, mm-hmm. that it passes over us, not because of us on the inside, but because of the blood of Jesus Christ applied to our life. That's what that means.
That's right.
And he's saying, listen, I wanted my daughters to be exposed, Sasha and Malia, right? Exposed to the Passover. That's huge. And I wanted to bring it into the White House, and we wanted to be able to celebrate that. It's a huge thing. Listen up.
It's a story of centuries of slavery and years of wandering in the desert. A story of perseverance amidst persecution and faith in God and the Torah.
Think about that. It's a story about faith in God in the first five books of the Bible.
Hmm.
That's beautiful. Is that not beautiful?
Yeah.
Beautiful.
That is a beautiful. And you have to understand, God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and on and on and on and on and on and on. And Moses.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's like, yeah. So that kind of resolves any split off up here at the top where
That's
he's
right.
saying he's acknowledging God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
Mm-hmm.
That order when you're talking yeah. about Moses, correct?
Yeah.
And the 12 sons.
Yeah, exactly.
It totally. 12 tribes.
Yeah. And definitely he's being African American. He's going to begin to compare what happened to the African American people in America, how that's a reality. That's a true history of America and how that there's a relationship and kind of like that, how, you know, Israel was going through a time of slavery and God was bringing them to a place of freedom. And I think it's a perfect analogy of what's happened. But listen up. Listen, listen up.
It's a story about finding freedom in your own land. And for the Jewish people, this story is central to who you've become. But it's also a story that holds within it the universal human experience, with all of its suffering, but also all of its salvation. It's a part of the three great religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, that trace their origins to Abraham.
Now, this is the point where he's talking about, you know, you also often hear this stuff, three great religions, but the reality is, what he's saying here is that where you had Jacob and Esau, you know, when you think about Esau, when you look at the Esau branch that came off and God said, I'm going to bless you and make you a nation, is that lineage that came out and eventually, you know, came up with the false religion of Islam.
Mm-hmm.
And, but yet they all claim Abraham.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The Jews, the Christians, and the Muslims all acknowledge Abraham and then how things kind of come from there. And so when he's saying that these three religions kind of stream from there, if he's claiming all the way back to Esau, you know, that was one of his, Jacob's brother.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So listen, obviously it's not a great, it's a false religion.
Right. Correct.
Right. Okay. Listen up.
And see Jerusalem as sacred. And it's a story that's inspired communities across the globe, including me and my fellow Americans. In the United States, a nation made up of people who crossed oceans to start anew were naturally drawn to the idea of finding freedom in our land. To African Americans, the story of the Exodus was perhaps the central story, the most powerful image about emerging from the grip of bondage to reach for liberty and human dignity. A tale that was carried from slavery through the civil rights movement into today. For generations, this promise helped people weather poverty and persecution while holding on to the hope that a better day was on the horizon. For me personally, growing up in far-flung parts of the world and without firm roots, the story spoke to a yearning within every human being for a home.
That's a top powerful statement because the president of our nation just said, I grew up with no roots in far-flung nations.
Mm.
But yet he's the president of the United States. Is that wild?
Yeah, that is.
Hmm. Listen up.
Of course, even as we draw strength from the story of God's will and his gift of freedom expressed on Passover, we also know that here on earth, we must bear our responsibilities in an imperfect world. That means accepting our measure of sacrifice and struggle, just like previous generations. It means us working through generation after generation on behalf of that ideal of freedom. As Dr. Martin Luther King said on the day before he was killed, I may not get there with you, but I want you to know that we as a people will get to the promised land. So just...
No matter what you think about politics, the very fact that an African-American president is standing in the promised land
Wow.
And
wow.
You think about Dr. King and his desire, you know, to be, he says, you know, that I might not get there with you, but I've been there. And now you have an African-American president, leader of America, standing in the promised land.
The promised land.
Wow. Yeah, the promised land.
Wow.
And it's just like, I am the fulfillment of his dream that he said one of us would be here.
Wow.
Isn't that cool when you think about Dr. King and his desire? Wow. And he said it a couple days before his life was taken, before he was murdered.
Mm-hmm.
And now, but yet, he's seeing that, I guess, from heaven, you know, seeing the fulfillment of it. It's just, you know what I'm saying? It's just so
powerful.
When you think about the African-American experience and how they were enslaved and oppressed, and I mean, it's Israel's experience and how they parallel. But look what's happened now. An African-American president is standing in Israel speaking. I mean, think about this. You know, picture yourself, you know, a couple thousand years back, and you have this leader standing talking to the children. As a matter of fact, he's about to call this the Joshua generation. Think about it. I mean, that is totally outside of Ishmael's lineage. I'm like, the Joshua generation. I mean, it's just exciting.
Mm-hmm.
It's you know, to hear this. I'm just trying to give you a biblical perspective of the speech of the president we're listening to that happened yesterday in Israel. Listen up.
So just as Joshua carried Moses, the work goes on for all of you, the Joshua generation, for justice and dignity, for opportunity and freedom. For the Jewish people, the journey to the promise of the state of Israel wound through countless generations. It involved centuries of suffering and exile, prejudice and pogroms, and even genocide. Through it all, the Jewish people sustained their unique identity and traditions, as well as a longing to return home. And while Jews achieved extraordinary success in many parts of the world, the dream of true freedom finally found its full expression in the Zionist idea, to be a free people in your homeland.
This is huge.
Wow.
This is huge. That our president, President Barack Obama, is saying that the Zionist, and that's who found, that's who was there in 1948 and all the different things going on, and the fulfillment of their land, the promised land. That's just beautiful, isn't it? It's just like
open acknowledgments, absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, it's open acknowledgement. He even goes deeper in that. Listen up, this is the president of the United States in Israel yesterday.
That's why I believe that Israel is rooted not just in history and tradition, but also in a simple and profound idea. The idea that people deserve to be free in a land of their own.
People deserve to be free. And this may, if you don't understand Israel and what's happening in the Middle East, that's a huge statement. You have to understand that Islam doesn't even acknowledge that Israel exists.
Right.
They don't even think that radical Islam doesn't even think they have the right to live,
right. Much less declare a place their home.
Right, and their desire is to push Israel into the sea. That they're saying that Israel is taking their land, which they're not. Mm-hmm. But that's what they're saying. And now our president is saying, "Don't think so. Don't think exactly. So. This is the president of the United States. We'll be right back in a moment with more of this. This is just This is just really exciting. It reminds me of Chuck Pierce's word that if we get a chance, we'll be able to have that for you. Yesterday in Israel, we want to pick right back up again and hearing some pretty powerful things are being said here by our president and acknowledge that Israel has a right to exist, that this is her land, that the Zionist movement was a God movement. It was the right thing. I mean, listen up. This is the president speaking yesterday in Israel. President of the United States, President Barack Obama.
Over the last 65 years, when Israel has been at its best, Israelis have demonstrated that responsibility does not end when you reach the promised land. It only begins. And so Israel has been a refuge for the diaspora, welcoming Jews from Europe, from the former Soviet Union, from Ethiopia, from North Africa. Israel has built a prosperous nation through kibbutzim that made the desert bloom, business that broadened the middle class, innovators who reached new frontiers from the smallest microchip to the orbits of space. Israel's established a thriving democracy with a spirited civil society and proud political parties and a tireless free press and a lively public debate. Lively may be an understatement.
You remember going to the market in Israel?
Yeah.
It's like, is this an argument or a shopping experience, right?
Yeah.
They are lively, huh?
They are excited.
Hey, listen up.
And Israel's achieved all this even as it's overcome relentless threats to its security through the courage of the Israel Defense Forces and the citizenry that is so resilient in the face of terror. This is the story of Israel. This is the work that has brought the dreams of so many generations to life. And every step of the way, Israel has built unbreakable bonds of friendship with my country, the United States of America. Those ties began only 11 minutes after Israeli independence, when the United States was the first nation to recognize the State of Israel.
This is so huge because we already knew that, but it's like you haven't heard anything like that coming out of this administration. And now the president is not only saying it, but he's saying it in Israel, because that is a very important thing, because the president that didn't sign it, that had opportunity to sign it, when he actually made a covenant basically with, I believe, Jordan or Saudi Arabia.
One of the kings?
Yes, about that they wouldn't become a nation. He had like 6 days left in his life.
Yeah.
And then his predecessor,
Harry Truman,
signed it when he got... Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
So it's so important, our relation to Israel, understanding
huge.
That. Because Franklin Roosevelt did not... Franklin Delano Roosevelt, FDR, made a covenant with Saudi and said, listen, they'll never become a nation. And he had like 6 or 7 days of his life left. Mm. But he didn't know that at that particular time.
Mm-hmm.
And then his predecessor signed it within 11 minutes.
Wow.
By the way, that's why America's still here. He's about to find out now. The president's about to find that out in just a moment. Listen up. Listen to their response.
As President Truman said in explaining his decision to recognize Israel, he said, I believe it has a glorious future before it, not just as another sovereign nation, but as an embodiment of the great ideals of our civilization. And since then, we've built a friendship that advances our shared interests. Together, we share a commitment to security for our citizens and the stability of the Middle East and North Africa. Together, we share a focus on advancing economic growth around the globe and strengthening the middle class within our own countries. Together, we share a stake in the success of democracy. But the source of our friendship extends beyond mere interests, just as it has transcended political parties and individual leaders. America is a nation of immigrants. America is strengthened by diversity. America is enriched by faith. We are governed not simply by men and women, but by laws.
Oh, yeah, that's right. But it does sound good. And I was like, yes, that's right. I remember that. Mm-hmm. We are a nation of laws. That's so good. You listen to the President of the United States right now, President Obama, speaking in Israel. Listen up.
We're fueled by entrepreneurship and innovation, and we are defined by a democratic discourse that allows each generation to reimagine and renew our union once more. So in Israel, we see values that we share, even as we recognize what makes us different. That is an essential part of our bond. Now, I stand here today mindful that for both our nations, these are some complicated times. We have difficult issues to work through within our own countries, and we face dangers and upheaval around the world. And when I look at young people within the United States, I think about the choices that they must make in their lives to define who will be as a nation in this 21st century, particularly as we emerge from two wars and the worst recession since the Great Depression. But part of the reason I like talking to young people is because no matter how great the challenges are, their idealism, their energy, their ambition always gives me hope. And I see the same spirit in the young people here today. I believe that you will shape our future. And given the ties between our countries, I believe your future is bound to ours. Oh, no.
You have somebody heckling in the audience right there. And what he did, he cupped his ear and leaned forward like, huh? Got something to say?
Mm-hmm.
Listen up. He's talking about that he believes that Israel's future is bound to ours.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really the opposite.
Yeah.
That
right.
Our future's bound to Israel.
Exactly.
And it's totally off Sunday responding to that. And the truth is we're blessed. Because Israel is blessed, and we stood with Israel, and with 6 million Jews in Israel, 6 million in America, and us standing with Israel, that's why we're here.
Mm-hmm.
That's not why they're there, because they're going to be there, you know. And
regardless,
yeah, and so they're just kind of expressing like, I think you missed the order there. I think isn't that cool though? 6 million people, little small piece land, better fits in New Jersey, you know, better, yeah. Besides New Jersey, and God's so powerful that the biggest nation in the world has to adjust itself. The most powerful nation in the world has to adjust itself to the reality that you're not God.
Right.
You know, this is God's land. Wow. The apple of God's. Isn't that awesome, though?
Think about it.
That's awesome.
And they're just, you know, in Israel, they just kind of express themselves, even cab drivers, right?
Oh, yeah.
That? Listen up. We're listening to the President of the United States in Israel yesterday speaking to the people. Listen up.
This is part of the lively debate that we talked about. This is good. I have to say we actually arranged for that because it made me feel at home. You know, I wouldn't feel comfortable if I didn't have at least one heckler. I'd like to focus on how we, and when I say we in particular, young people, can work together.
This is the moment the young people are going like, we? You're an old man. You're in your 40s, right? They don't ever think you were young. They don't realize how young we are, right?
Right.
To make progress in three areas that will define our times. Security, peace, and prosperity. Let me begin with security. I'm proud that the security relationship between the United States and Israel has never been stronger. Never. More exercises between our militaries. More exchanges among our political and military and intelligence officials than ever before. The largest program to date to help you retain your qualitative military edge. These are the facts. These aren't my opinions. These are facts. But to me, this is not simply measured on a balance sheet. I know that here in Israel, security is something personal. Here's what I think about when I consider these issues. When I consider Israel's security, I think about children like Osher Tweedle, who I met in Storop. You know, children the same age as my own daughters, who went to bed at night fearful that a rocket would land in their bedroom simply because of who they are and where they live. That reality is why we've invested in the Iron Dome system, to save countless lives, because those children deserve to sleep better at night.
This is huge. This is huge, yeah. Because he's saying, listen, that Israel has a right to exist and a right to be safe and secure. And these missiles that are being fired over the borders by Hezbollah and whoever, that is wrong, and we are standing. That's huge, because it was so silent for so long.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And now he's talking about the real deal.
Yeah.
You know, the Jews are being killed by these missiles. The family are being killed by these bombs. Family. So listen up. Mm. The president in Israel speaking just yesterday.
That's why we've made it clear time and again that Israel cannot accept rocket attacks from Gaza, and we have stood up for Israel's right to defend itself. And that's why Israel has a right to expect Hamas to renounce violence and recognize Israel's right to exist.
That is so
That's huge.
Wow.
That's just huge. I mean, even if he didn't mean it, this is
huge.
You can't even take that back. It's like, oh my goodness, these words have come out. And we're not going to be able to obviously do everything we want to do on this, but we do want to let you know we're about to go to break, but and come back to the president's speech, but made available with this speech on the VFN Torch at VFNTV.com. You're also going to have a prophetic word by Chuck Pierce that talks about this very speech that was given years ago, about before Barack Obama was even on the grid about running for a political office, and that we would have an African-American president. It would seem to be, you know, against Israel for the first term, but in the second term, America would change its position Israel. And this is a position changer. Mm-hmm. More of the president's speech in a moment.
Wow.
You know, I want to encourage you, as you're listening to VFN Radio every day, you know, we're 24/7. We're 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We're live 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Central, but we're 24/7, anytime, any time zone, all the way from Okinawa, Japan to San Diego, California. You know what I'm saying? You can come on to VFNTV.com or download our app and listen live. But we also have highlights. We actually have an entire two-hour broadcast broken up into certain segments that you can, something, you know, it just may be on your heart or on your, you wanted to hear that one thing. It's all you have time for. It's all you wanted to hear. And that's why we do that. And you can go right to that on the VFN Torch at VFNTV.com and click on the Torch. Or you can go to your app and just kind of thumb through the names of the highlights and listen to that one segment. But that's all for you. We want to deliver everything that we're called to deliver to you in any way that we can that helps you meet your need at that time. Sometimes you just don't have time to get it this way. You have to get it that way. And sometimes you don't have time to get it that way. You get it this way. So don't forget, you can go to VFNTV.com. You can go to VFNTV.com and it's there for you.
You know, Pat, the great thing about VFN Radio is that you can take it on the go with you. You can do that now with the VFN Radio app. No matter where you're at, you can continue to enjoy VFN Radio on the go. You can search for prophetic words, wisdom moments, and it's right there available. All you have to do is go to your search in your Google Play or your iPhone App Store. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, it's totally amazing.
Total download, free, doesn't cost you anything. Get the app today. Go to Android or iPhone, Google Play or iPhone app, and search VFN TV and download. Free, doesn't cost you a thing, and take VFN Radio on the go.
It is amazing how this is all working. It's people just like you, friends like you, that stand with us and understand, you know, we've got to make a difference in our generation, that stand with us prayerfully and financially, that just partner on a monthly basis to financially build a foundation that where we can carry this message not only to the nation of America, but to the nations of the world. It's amazing how so many people are being encouraged by a simple gift of a few dollars a month, $25 a month, $50 a month, whatever it is. And you know what? Together, if you're having difficulty in how to present the gospel to this generation, partner with us, and we together at VFN TV and the Daily Radio Program will bring the gospel to this nation and this nation by God's grace to the Lord. Go to VFNTV.com and click on giving. VFNTV.com and click on giving. Welcome back to VFN Radio's Extra Hour. I'm your host, Greg Lancaster. We are listening to the president's speech in Israel just yesterday, and we want to get right back to it. It's amazing some of the things that he is saying. Listen up. Listen up right now. Israel has a right not to have missiles fired into it by Gaza. I mean, listen up.
When I think about Israel's security, I think about five Israelis who boarded a bus in Bulgaria. Were blown up because of where they came from, robbed of the ability to live and love and raise families. That's why every country that values justice should call Hezbollah what it truly is, a terrorist organization.
Wow.
You know, if you've had your hair buried in the sand, you don't understand what's going on here. He just publicly identified the militant arm of the Muslim Brotherhood, Hezbollah, which is, this is really the whole thing, is a terrorist organization. Now, we couldn't even use the word terror over here. We had to remove the word terror from all of our, remember, we were removing all the things.
Yeah,
exactly.
And it's like, has he set these folks up? You start thinking, oh my goodness, this is amazing. So it is out. It is out. America is saying, we do understand, and just like Israel does, that this is a terrorist organization.
They printed 25 different newspapers with different headlines. I'm just joking about all the statements.
Right.
It's like amazing.
Wow. Yeah, and so we're listening to the President of the United States in Israel yesterday speaking to the people. Listen up.
Because the world cannot tolerate an organization that murders innocent civilians, stockpiles rockets to shoot at cities, and supports the massacre of men and women and children in Syria right now.
That's so huge, because you're thinking all along, it's like, does anybody see the murdering of civilians and what's going on? And it's like,
wow,
the cat is out the bag. The cat is out the bag. Our president right now, with his words, is standing with Israel. He's identifying America as a democracy and Israel as basically the only other democracy that's standing up for its people. I mean, this is going to be a positive thing in the eyes of God, being able to stand up. Because even somebody who is not even a follower of God, if you'll stand up for Israel, you got a ticket to be able to be blessed in the context.
Those who bless Israel will be blessed.
That's that. Listen, that's you listen to the President of the United States yesterday in Israel. Listen up.
The fact that Hezbollah's ally, the Assad regime, has stockpiles of chemical weapons only heightens the urgency. We will continue to cooperate closely to guard against that danger. I've made it clear to Bashar al-Assad and all who follow his orders, we will not tolerate the use of chemical weapons against the Syrian people or the transfer of those weapons to terrorists. The world is watching. We will hold you accountable.
That's exciting, isn't it?
Yeah.
The biggest stockpile of chemical weapons in the world is in Syria. And right now it is volatile. We talked about that earlier on VFN Radio this year, even last year, we were talking about the concerns. Mm-hmm. And he's saying, listen, our eye is on you. You touch those chemicals, you do anything with those chemicals, you know, we are not going to let those things go in the hand of terrorists. And by the way, Hezbollah is a terrorist organization.
That's right.
And Hamas. In Gaza, you quit lobbing your bombs over here, because I'm like, oh my goodness. Is this not like the fulfillment, it seems like, of the Chuck Pierce's prophetic word? Listen, this is the President of the United States in Israel yesterday speaking to the people.
The Syrian people have the right to be freed from the grip of a dictator who would rather kill his own people than relinquish power.
That's right.
Yeah. Assad must go so that Syria's future can begin. Because true stability in Syria depends upon establishing a government that is responsible to its people, one that protects all communities within its borders while making peace with countries beyond them. These are the things I think about when I think about Israel's security. When I consider Israel's security, I also think about a people who have a living memory of the Holocaust. Faced with the prospect of a nuclear-armed Iranian government that has called for Israel's destruction.
Okay, Iran says the Holocaust never happened.
That's right.
Yeah.
Many Muslims are saying, they're taught that it's all made up. It never happened. And he's not only identifying it's a reality, which is amazing if anybody can really think it's not a reality, if you have not gone to one of the museums and just talked to those that have family that went through it. But now he's talking about, he's comparing right now the tension. He's explaining why Israel would be so tense because their history is there was a Holocaust where they were going to be exterminated and killed. 6 million Jews were killed over 6 years.
Yeah.
And now there's 6 million Jews in Israel, and the enemy's wanting to, you know, Iran's wanting to destroy them in 6 minutes. Nuclear weapons. And so he's explaining, he's helping the world understand, you know, why there would be that inside of Israel's heart. Listen up. But listen to the President of the United States talking to the people in Israel yesterday.
It's no wonder Israelis view this as an existential threat. But this is not simply a challenge for Israel. It is a danger for the entire world, including the United States. A nuclear-armed Iran would raise the risk of nuclear terrorism. It would undermine the non-proliferation regime. It would spark an arms race in a volatile region. And it would embolden a government that has shown no respect for the rights of its own people or the responsibilities of nations. And that's why America has built a coalition to increase the cost to Iran of failing to meet their obligations. The Iranian government is now under more pressure than ever before, and that pressure is increasing. It is isolated, its economy is in dire straits, its leadership is divided, and its position in the region and the world has only grown weaker.
Yeah, I think their only friend is like North Korea.
Yeah.
You know, they're playing like solitaire the other day as the nuclear firecracker went off. Okay, listen up. We're listening to the President of the United States in Israel speaking yesterday. Listen up.
I do believe that all of us have an interest in resolving this issue peacefully. Strong and principled diplomacy is the best way to ensure that the Iranian government forsakes nuclear weapons. Peace is far more preferable to war. And the inevitable costs, the unintended consequences that would come with war means that we have to do everything we can to try to resolve this diplomatically. Because of the cooperation between our governments, we know that there remains time to pursue a diplomatic resolution. That's what America will do, with clear eyes, working with a world that's united, and with the sense of urgency that's required. But Iran must know this time is not unlimited. And I've made the position of the United States of America clear. Iran must not get a nuclear weapon. This is not a danger that can be contained. And as president, I've said all options are on the table for achieving our objectives. America will do what we must to prevent a nuclear-armed Iran.
Oh, my goodness.
Powerful.
I'm so encouraged. I don't know about you guys. I am so like, oh, my gosh. Thank you, Lord.
stepping up to the plate, saying we're going to do everything in our power. Iran is not going to have this nuclear weapon, and they're not going to launch it towards Israel. I mean, you couldn't ask anything more clear or better coming from the president of the United States.
I know. This is just so encouraging. Beautiful. It's obviously there's going to be fruit to back it up.
Oh yeah.
But I don't think you can get out of this. You might as well just. We're going to have to do it now. Not us. We're going to have to. Either way.
Yeah.
This wasn't a sandwich statement. This is on a statement upon 10, 12 positive affirming statements towards Israel. You know what I mean?
And against their adversaries. And make sure and listen. Don't forget. You can go to the torch. You can go to VFNTV.com. Click on the torch, and you can not only hear this again, but you're going to be able to hear a prophetic word given by Chuck Pierce. Will be there in that particular post, speaking about this particular thing. We talked about it, some time back, that America would shift its position in his second term, and here we was. That was before his second term even became a reality. When we were talking about it, and it was before he even became president when Chuck was prophesying about it. And this is very encouraging. We listened to the president of the United States yesterday speaking to the people. Listen up.
For young Israelis, I know that these issues of security are rooted in an experience that's even more fundamental than the pressing threat of the day. You live in a neighborhood where many of your neighbors have rejected the right of your nation to exist. And your grandparents had to risk their lives and all that they had to make a place for themselves in this world.
This is huge. He's saying your neighbors. You live amongst neighbors that say you don't have a right to exist. This is true. I mean, he's saying true. This is exactly what happens.
Imagine acknowledging it.
Yeah. It's one thing your neighbor not liking you, but it's another thing your neighbor plotting to remove you from the face of the earth and say you don't have a right to exist, and they believe that you don't have a right to exist.
And he's
acknowledging it. Listen up. You listened to the President of the United States yesterday speaking to the people in Israel.
Your parents lived through war after war to ensure the survival of the Jewish state. Your children grow up knowing that people they've never met may hate them because of who they are in a region that is full of turmoil and changing underneath your feet. So that's what I think about when Israel's faced with these challenges. That sense of an Israel that is surrounded by many in this region who still reject it and many in the world who refuse to accept it. That's why the security of the Jewish people in Israel is so important. It cannot be taken for granted. But make no mistake, those who adhere to the ideology of rejecting Israel's right to exist, they might as well reject the earth beneath them or the sky above, because Israel's not going anywhere.
Oh my goodness. Wow. You might as well reject the air above or the earth beneath your feet, because Israel's not going anywhere.
Wow.
You feel it? Wow. I feel it. I'm like, we're just witnessing a shift.
I felt it.
I'm just feeling, I feel God all over me, man, this moment. You know, that's a prophecy.
No doubt.
You know, sometimes a prophet doesn't realize they're prophesying, but that's a prophecy. Mm-hmm. It's true. Mm-hmm. I mean, nothing's going to happen to Israel. I mean, Israel's going to make it. And it's like, oh, but our president wants them to make it. And he sees the enemy and the adversary. And he has obviously unfolding a strategy here. And he's unashamedly standing up and saying, you might as well say, you know, goodbye to the air above and air above and the earth beneath your feet, because Israel ain't going nowhere. Listen, you listen to the president of the United States yesterday in Israel speaking to the people. We're listening to the President of the United States speaking yesterday in Israel. This is a pinnacle moment, like I was saying. This is a pinnacle moment for the world. You know, God, what are you about to do? What are you about to do? But listen to this. President of the United States speaking yesterday to the people of Israel. Listen up.
And today I want to tell you, particularly the young people, so that there's no mistake here. So long as there is a United States of America, atem lo lavad. You are not alone.
Wow.
Man.
That's huge.
Wow.
He's saying as long as there's the United States of America, Israel, you are not alone.
Wow. When all your enemies are surrounding you.
That statement may have secured our future.
Yeah. No doubt. No doubt. When you have all your enemies surrounding you, wanting to wipe you off the face of the earth, when you have basically all guns pointed at you, to hear the superpower, the world's largest country saying, "We're with you, and you're never, never going to be alone in this." To the future, not
right.
To your parents, to the future, to you when you get older. As long as America's here, we're going to be with you. That's huge. God's hearing all of this.
Yeah, and too. Also, what comes to mind is, then they will shout peace, peace, and then. You know, that sudden, you know,
mm-hmm.
But still, I mean, encouraged. I'm encouraged.
Yeah.
Listen
yeah.
up. We're listening to the President of the United States speaking to the people of Israel.
The question is, what kind of future Israel will look forward to? Israel's not going anywhere, but especially for the young people in this audience, the question is, what does its future hold? And that brings me to the subject of peace. I know Israel has taken risks for peace. Brave leaders, Menachem Begin, Yitzhak Rabin, reached treaties with two of your neighbors. You made credible proposals to the Palestinians at Annapolis. You withdrew from Gaza and Lebanon and then faced terror and rockets. Across the region, you've extended a hand of friendship, and all too often, you've been confronted with rejection and, in some cases, the ugly reality of anti-Semitism.
My goodness. Think about it. This is huge. He just gave them their history and said, I'm aware of it.
Yeah.
And I'm aware how kind you've been and how long-suffering you've been and how they've treated you the opposite of what your actions deserved. Mm-hmm. And I'm aware in all of that, anti-Semitism, hatred of the Jews is what that means.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you had to experience in that. That's just huge.
Huge.
Totally huge. Listen up. You listened to the President of the United States and Israel yesterday.
So I believe that the Israeli people do want peace. And I also understand why too many Israelis, maybe an increasing number, maybe a lot of young people here today are skeptical that it can be achieved. But today, Israel is at a crossroads. It can be tempting to put aside the frustrations and sacrifices that come with the pursuit of peace.
It's what's interesting in this moment is Israel's at a crossroads. But we have to understand, he participated in helping Israel get at this crossroads.
Yeah.
You know, he participated in, you know, Cairo's speech and bringing the Muslim Brotherhood into power and removing Mubarak and, you know what I'm saying? So
yeah, and empowering the Brotherhood.
Right. And it's like, okay, we understand that you're under pressure now.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you had a little to do with that. Wouldn't you say you had a little to do with that, with this little spring thing going on right here?
Mm-hmm.
This Arab Spring. But still, just listen, we want to get a perspective of this. We have to remember this, that the enemy has no problem not telling the truth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people are like, I can't believe somebody would not tell the truth. But people who don't tell the truth don't tell the truth. But this is, I really hope this is truth. I really hope this is truth. This is just an awesome perspective. Listen to the president speak at Israel yesterday. Listen up.
Particularly when Iron Dome repels rockets, barriers keep out suicide bombers, there's so many other pressing issues that demand your attention. And I know that only Israelis can make the fundamental decisions about your country's future. I reckon
that's important, too, because remember the big dilemma was early on that America was given the impression that don't do anything unless we tell you to do it. Mm. And he's openly saying, in the world, he's letting everybody else know, too, they have the fundamental right to make their own decisions and their own
that's
security,
right.
their own safety and future. And he's saying it. So everybody knows now that he's not, you know, going to do, or at least, you know,
mm-hmm. their hands are not tied.
Right. Hands are not tied. Mm-hmm. Whatever you need to do, which means, you know, Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister, is saying, listen, we're going to have to deal with this nuclear.
With Iran. We'll have to deal with
it. Iran. Listen up. It's the president of the United States.
Recognize that. I also know, by the way, that not everyone in this hall will agree with what I have to say about peace. I recognize that there are those who are not simply skeptical about peace, but question its underlying premise, have a different vision for Israel's future. And that's part of a democracy. That's part of the discourse between our two countries. I recognize that. But I also believe it's important to be open and honest, especially with your friends. I also believe that. You know, politically, given the strong bipartisan support for Israel in America, the easiest thing for me to do would be to put this issue aside. Just express unconditional support for whatever Israel decides to do. That would be the easiest political path. But I want you to know that I speak to you as a friend who is deeply concerned and committed to your future, and I ask you to consider 3 points.
That's huge. A friend deeply committed to your future. I could step aside, and he's projecting, saying, listen, I want you to make it. I want Israel not to be threatened like this. And now he's extended to bring the points in. Listen up.
First, peace is necessary. I believe that.
When you're the size of New Jersey and everybody else is the size of, you know, Texas all the way around you and they're against you, of course, I mean, that's what you're peace, hello.
Yeah,
it's awesome. Hold on, listen up.
I believe that peace is the only path to true security.
But this is where that thing says peace, sudden destruction thing. You know, like, oh my goodness. Because that's the whole thing, is pressing for peace. And so many things have been done to create this crossroads that we know about, and which all we know is the tip of an iceberg. Mm-hmm. And now this particular person saying, in peace, I mean, you're looking at a world figure here. You're not looking at the president of the United States. Now you're looking at somebody who sees himself as a world figure, it looks like. Mm-hmm. And we could be getting into biblical prophetic happenings. I mean, and we are, but just those kind of, because everybody's going peace and they're cheering, peace. Mm-hmm. And it's like, but didn't you create this crossroad right here? Well, right. Listen up.
You have the opportunity to be the generation that permanently secures the Zionist dream, or you can face a growing challenge to its future. Given the demographics west of the Jordan River, the only way for Israel to endure and thrive as a Jewish and democratic state is through the realization of an independent and viable Palestine. That is true.
This is very, very important here, because what he's saying is the only way to true peace now is to give up some land. Is to divide the land, to divide the nation of Israel. You have to remember, it's not theirs to divide. And that we're looking at a biblical perspective, so you understand here. Look at Joel. get your Bible and look at Joel chapter 3, verse 1 through 2. And he's talking about the day of judgment. And he says, in those days and at that time, when I restore the fortunes of Judea and Jerusalem, and when you talk about West Bank, that's Judea, and Jerusalem, I will gather all nations and bring them down to the valley of Jehoshaphat. There I will put them on trial for what they did to my inheritance, my people Israel, because they scattered my people among the nations and divided the land.
Mm.
And that's something. Let me read that again. Joel chapter 3, verse 1 through 2. This is nation will be judged. This is the end time judgment is going to be based on how we responded to Israel, which includes the land.
Mm-hmm.
In those days and at that time, I will restore the fortunes of Judah and Jerusalem, and I will gather all nations and bring them down to the valley of Jehoshaphat. There I will put them on trial. So God's going to have a trial. Could you present your evidence of what happened? Well, there was this particular president that came, and many presidents have done this, and said that they wanted the land to be divided. Now, if he's successful at this, he'll be on trial and be a part of dividing it. And he says, and I will put them on trial for what they did to my inheritance, my people Israel, because they scattered my people amongst the nations and divided my land. Although you would think, hey, what's the big deal about a Palestinian state? The big deal is that the Middle East is huge and there's plenty of places for the Palestinian people to live. They intentionally push them that way, the Arab nations, so they can press on Israel, so Israel can give them more land, more land, and more land. They should actually take them into Saudi Arabia. They should take them into Jordan. They should take and let them settle, but they rejected them. And they're supporting this whole thing because they want Israel to give up land.
Mm.
And you can't do it. And so at that point, a biblical perspective, he gets a zero. And that is not good for that aspect of it. We don't need to be supportive of that. There's plenty of land in America, I mean the world and in the Middle East. And don't take Israel's land. Right?
That's right.
No doubt.
You listen to the President of the United States giving a speech in Israel just yesterday. Listen up. You have to understand, if people think about Israel, they think, oh, man, that's the most holiest situations and perfect walking. But you have to understand, it's pretty much a secular nation that presently have the veil over their eyes in regards to the Messiah and Jesus. But God's about to, I feel like we're really close to the time that that veil is going to be removed. And there are brothers, you know, in the context of God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And so they're just thinking in the natural context. Yeah, I want peace. I want peace here. So listen up. That peace, by the way, will only come through the Messiah, through their acknowledgement of the Messiah. It's not going to come any other way. But since ever since the day that Jesus walked on the face of this earth, his own disciples were thinking that he was going to bring peace and that he was going to set up his kingdom, and it was going to come that way. But it's not until they acknowledge, you know, Jesus as the Messiah that this peace is going to come. But they're going to. It's going to come, and their eyes are going to be open. It's just pretty powerful. But listen up. This is the President of the United States, Israel, yesterday.
There are other factors involved. Given the frustration in the international community about this conflict, Israel needs to reverse an undertow of isolation. And given the march of technology, the only way to truly protect the Israeli people over the long term is through the absence of war, because no wall is high enough and no Iron Dome is strong enough or perfect enough to stop every enemy that is intent on doing so from inflicting harm. And this truth is more pronounced given the changes sweeping the Arab world. I understand that with the uncertainty in the region, people in the streets, changes in leadership, the rise of non-secular parties in politics, it's tempting to turn inward because the situation outside of Israel seems so chaotic. But this is precisely the time to respond to the wave of revolution with a resolve and commitment for peace.
Hold on a minute. Now, this is what we're talking about, the wave of revolution. He's talking to the young people. He skipped over the Knesset.
Yep.
He stepped over, kind of skimmed with over the president of Israel and the prime minister, quick little meet there. But now he's with the people, literally trying to stir up an Israeli spring.
Mm.
And the wave that's coming across.
Catch the wave.
Catch the wave. And hoping that the young people begin to see things differently. And what he's really promoting in the context of it, whether he knows it or not, in my opinion, is a secular society that has all kinds of gods and minimize Jesus, minimize, those that are walking with the Lord and stir the youthful lusts of the young people to rebel against what is, and so they're like, well, yeah, that's right. Since he's saying secular people have quit running for politics, and you have these, non-secular, which means religious folks getting in office, then it begins to the ideology of the believer and the religious person. He's saying, I know that's kind of just like, I was like, wait a minute, you come from America.
Wow.
Even though you came from a place with no roots and scattered across the land, that a Judeo-Christian roots of who we are, the foundation. Mm. But listen up, so continue to listen. I mean, he's saying, it sounds like at the very beginning of the speech, he's just bringing everybody on board after, 5 years of bringing them to this crossroad of, oh my goodness, this looks bad.
Right.
And now he's fixing to offload. Maybe this is the agenda. Maybe this is what's going on. Listen up.
Because
this is the President of the United States in Israel.
As more governments respond to popular will, the days when Israel could seek peace simply with a handful of autocratic leaders, those days are over.
Remember that he said the very same thing about America. The day that we were a Christian nation, those days are over. Those days, so he's literally trying to get a new picture of the world, a secular picture of the world that allows different gods, but y'all got to get along. Mm. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this is, a no-no in regards to us as believers, that it's Jesus and him only. He's the only way to God. He is the Messiah. And, but listen up. So maybe it just seems like that's what's about to happen here. And the reason why we're playing the president's speech, because that's our president speaking to Israel. These are two very important things to us. That's our value system. And what are the values being pronounced now over Israel? Ever how goes Israel, so goes the church, by the way.
Peace will have to be made among peoples, not just governments. No single step can change overnight what lies in the hearts and minds of millions. No single step is going to erase years of history and propaganda. But progress with the Palestinians is a powerful way to begin, while sidelining extremists who thrive on conflict and thrive on division. It would make a difference. So peace is necessary, but peace is also just. Peace is also just. There is no question that Israel has faced Palestinian factions who turned to terror, leaders who missed historic opportunities. That is all true. And that's why security must be at the center of any agreement. And there is no question that the only path to peace is through negotiations, which is why, despite the criticism we've received, the United States will oppose unilateral efforts to bypass negotiations through the United Nations. It has to be done by the parties.
And what he's saying here is that we're going to allow the United Nations to do it. They're not gonna sideline the United Nations. They're gonna let it happen through. They're not gonna surpass that. That's how it should go. But let's listen again and see if it comes out differently.
So peace is necessary, but peace is also just. Peace is also just. There is no question that Israel has faced Palestinian factions who turned to terror, leaders who missed historic opportunities. That is all true. And that's why security must be at the center of any agreement. And there is no question that the only path to peace is through negotiations, which is why, despite the criticism we've received, the United States will oppose unilateral efforts.
Which means one-sided efforts.
Will oppose one-sided efforts.
Right.
To bypass negotiations through the United Nations.
To bypass
negotiations through the United Nations. That's right.
So he's saying, I want to take it to the United Nations, which has a majority of Muslim nations in it.
But then this next statement, he says almost, well, go ahead.
Welcome to.
Yeah. Which they have a voting block.
What's that?
Those Muslim nations together have a voting block that have voted on other things against Israel.
Exactly. They even call Israel a terrorist state.
Yes.
Listen up.
The United Nations. It has to be done by the parties.
Well, parties would be part of
members of the UN, probably.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which is not good. By the way, biblical perspective. Right there. Imagine if the people that are trying to come against Israel are the ones who sit on the Council of the United Nations. And by the way, they have a one-sided unilateral viewpoint that he's saying, he's being this hero coming here and saying, listen, we're not going to have this unilateral argument. We're going to take it to the unilateral United Nations, the one-sided United Nations. It's going to vote against Israel.
Wow.
Because United Nations has been, they've always focused on Israel being the bad guy.
Yeah.
But you have to understand, it's not because it's the people in the United Nations, because they've worked it out where they have a Muslim majority of nations that are in there. And it's just, but listen up. This is the president speaking yesterday at the to Israel.
But the Palestinian people's right to self-determination, their right to justice, must also be recognized. And put yourself in their shoes. Look at the world through their eyes. It is not fair that a Palestinian child cannot grow up in a state of their own. Living their entire lives with the presence of a foreign army that controls the movements, not just of those young people, but their parents, their grandparents, every single day. It's not just when settler violence against Palestinians goes unpunished. It's not right to prevent Palestinians from farming their lands or restricting a student's ability to move around the West Bank or displace Palestinian families from their homes. Neither occupation nor expulsion is the answer.
Of course, a true democracy would be, hey, why don't you join Israel? Why don't you submit to the Constitution of Israel?
Right.
And that's how you have a democracy. You don't cut the nation in half and say that's a democracy and give it to somebody. That's how you actually do it. He's saying, yeah, they do have a right, but they have to join Israel to have that right. They're in Israel without submitting to the Constitution of Israel. They want to do their own particular thing there. It's just a whole different twist on the whole thing.
Just as Israelis built a state in their homeland, Palestinians have a right to be a free people in their own land.
And that's true. It just happens to be Israel's not their homeland.
Right.
You know, I'm going off script here for a second, but before I came here, I met with a group of young Palestinians from the age of 15 to 22. And talking to them, they weren't that different from my daughters. They weren't that different from your daughters or sons. I honestly believe that if any Israeli parent sat down with those kids, they'd say, I want these kids to succeed. I want them to prosper. I want them to have opportunities just like my kids do. I believe that's what Israeli parents would want for these kids if they had a chance to listen to them and talk to them. I believe that. Now, only you can determine what kind of democracy you will have. But remember that as you make these decisions, you will define not simply the future of your relationship with the Palestinians, you will define the future of Israel as well. As Ariel Sharon said, I'm quoting him, it is impossible to have a Jewish democratic state at the same time to control all of Eretz Israel. If we insist on fulfilling the dream in its entirety, we are liable to lose it all. Or, from a different perspective, I think of what the novelist David Grossman said shortly after losing his son, as he described the necessity of peace. A peace of no choice, he said, must be approached with the same determination and creativity as one approaches a war of no choice. Now, Israel cannot be expected to negotiate with anyone who's dedicated to its destruction.
It's very important what we're saying here, because what he's saying, because it is he's saying right things about Israel, but then he's diverting it. He says, let's go to the United Nations, and we're opposed to this one-sided negotiations for Israel, for this a peace in the Middle East. So let's just take it to the United Nations. But you have to understand, if Israel's enemies are the majority, the voting bloc of the United Nations, it's like saying Israel just submit to Islam, and we will resolve all this. As a matter of fact, I want you to listen right now. This is called Understanding the United Nations Biased Against Israel, and we'll get back to the president's speech. Understanding United Nations Bias Towards Israel. Listen up.
No matter how you feel about the United Nations, it's the one place on planet Earth where nations get together and attempt to speak with one voice. That's why their resolutions can make a big difference. So when people all around the world see that approximately 40% of the UN Human Rights Council resolutions were against just one country, most of us would assume that country must be a really bad place.
40% of the resolutions were against Israel. Of all the things they're doing, 40%, the entire world, 40% of the United Nations decisions that were saying something bad about a nation was being said about Israel. And then our president just said, listen, we will not, let this thing go unilateral.
Bypass.
Yeah, well, that's what the UN is. The UN is a unilateral movement.
One-sided movement.
Exactly, it is. So hello, we're learning here. So listen up, this is more about the United Nations and what he's really saying. Let's take it there, and it'll look like it was done by the United Nations. Listen up.
Perhaps ruled by, oh, say, a genocidal dictator who kills his own people, or maybe a tyrant continually threatening to annihilate another country. But actually, the country that has been condemned more times than every repressive country on Earth combined is a democracy. The only viable democracy in the Middle East, Israel. And with these repeated resolutions against Israel, it's easy to see why so many in the international community perceive Israel as a major cause of world problems. But are all these resolutions really justified? Because whether or not you agree with how Israel is handling its many challenges, when you do a basic comparison, like the number of deaths Israel is responsible for with the number of condemnations they've received, and then make that same comparison with other countries, it paints a surprising picture of a possible double standard. What could
you have to understand this. You know, you're going to see this. We'll make this available to you on the VFN Torch. But what they're showing here is they're talking about these different biases is a graph understanding that, Israel, everything that ever happened, it was 46,000 deaths that they were talking about with Israel. But listen, in regards to these other nations, out of 223, they had 223 condemnations coming from the United Nations. Oh. But then you compare that to Nigeria, who had zero condemnations from the United Nations, zero, but over 1 million deaths.
Wow.
Now, there was 46,000 deaths in Israel, and they had 223 condemnations from Israel. Oh. Then again, Nigeria had 1 million deaths and zero condemnations from the United Nations. You have North Korea had 10 condemnations from the United Nations, but there was over 2 million deaths. And the Sudan had 2.25 million deaths and only 45 condemnations. And Cambodia had 3 million deaths and only 14 condemnations from the United Nations. And China, zero condemnations. And China has had, it's just amazing. And he's saying, listen, we want to take this thing to the United Nations. Realize the United Nations is not Christian friends and is not the Jews' friend.
No.
We want to continue to listen up and understand this is the perspective of the United Nations. And we're going to go back to the president's speech. Listen up. It's a double standard they're talking about here.
Explain the enormous imbalance. Quick history lesson. In 1975, Cuba needed to gather support in order to take down the biggest democratic superpower dominating the global schoolyard, the United States. Seeing how the UN was mostly controlled by the democratic superpowers, Cuba, along with other communist nations, finally found a way to even the playing field, because it just so happened that, at the same time, a number of Muslim countries were looking for new, creative ways to gang up on Israel. So the communists realized that by joining the Muslims' anti-Israel coalition, they could create an unstoppable voting bloc inside the UN.
Unstoppable voting bloc against Israel, the anti-Israel campaign. They created an unstoppable voting bloc. And our president, who's been very Muslim Brotherhood friendly, who fueled the spring... and some things he did or didn't do, who didn't respond to the Green Party in Iran when they were in the streets, and we could have stopped this nuclear threat probably at that moment and changed the regime because the people wrote him a letter when they were in the streets of Iran and we did nothing. We remained silent.
Mm.
He's saying we want to stop this one-sidedness and carry it to the one-sided United Nations that is totally against Israel.
Right.
Wow.
Is that something? Let's continue listening what we're talking about when he's saying take it to the United Nations. We're going to continue to hear the understanding of the UN biased against Israel and it's done by the Jerusalem Institute of Justice. Listen up.
Because with every resolution they passed against Israel, they simultaneously discredited Israel's ally, the UN.
That's us. They discredited us, the American people.
United States. So in 1975, the newfound communist Muslim voting bloc.
The newfound communist Muslim voting block.
Spearheaded the passing of a UN resolution that officially stated Zionism is a form of racism.
Understand that even though our president's talking about Zionism and you found this land and all that, he referred Israel. Now we telling these young guys who don't understand probably this, that that we believe that Zionism is a form of racism. Think about that. We believe that Zionism is a form of racism. Wow. In other words, the very fact that you want to be in this land, you know, and you want to live as the Jews here in this land, the majority voting bloc, the unstoppable voting bloc, considers this racism.
Isn't that almost like somebody who's proud to be an American, who's, and then someone saying that that's racism because they're proud to be an American?
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
like, come on now, give me a break.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let's just finish this up and we're going to go right back to the president.
Yes, Zionism. The movement trying to find ways to protect Jews from racism was redefined as racism, which is kind of like saying the civil rights movement is racism and Martin Luther King is a racist. This is why resolution after resolution after resolution against Israel from 1975 until this day easily passes through the UN. But today, this movement has a new tool for attacking Israel as the cause of all our problems. The UN's Durban Review Conference on Racism. Durban is charged with finding the real root of racism, and at the last conference, keynote speaker and human rights best friend Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, yeah, the guy who openly called for Israel's annihilation, revealed that Zionism is not only racist, but the true root of racism throughout the world.
So he's saying Zionism is the root of racism throughout the world, and this is the leader of this voting bloc is the president at that time. The president of Iran, the one that he didn't respond to the Green Party, who was in the streets.
Wow.
I mean, this is Israel being set up. Mm. It appears, right? It seems like Israel's being set up. Let's finish up.
And what has history taught us about what tends to happen when one ethnic group is believed to be the hidden root to all the world's problems? What is happening at...
What he showed was Hitler's... swastika.
Uh-huh.
And he took all those words and then he made a swastika. That's what we find out when they start focusing on one particular race as a problem. Mm. That's the things that we actually hear. You'll probably see this video on the same post if you have been torched. But listen up.
Durban is catastrophic, not only for Jews, but for the whole world. And it's growing, spreading, and gaining credibility through Durban. In fact, this year, representatives from over 140 different countries will descend on New York City for Durban as speakers work to convince them about the secret Jewish cause to worldwide racism. Let's learn from history and this time act before false accusations lead to violence. We cannot leave this message unchallenged.
It is amazing. We're finding out then, so when we're hearing the president speak about Israel, and we're talking about the president's speech because Israel.
Mm.
You know, America. So everything he said, the first part of the speech, it seems now that we're just throwing in the hands of a voting bloc that's against Israel. And you remember the condemnations is like, it's like, really? This is like biblical major, you know, we got to really pray for Israel and America. Now we're really seeing why the big shift that God's been talking to us about. Let's just finish up. We're joining the president towards the end of his speech here. He's speaking in Israel yesterday, and we're trying to get a biblical perspective of, you know, what's going on. And the first part of the speech, we're just pumped. We're going, oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm.
And now all of a sudden we're turning it over to a Muslim voting bloc in the United Nations to decide the future of Israel.
Yeah.
Let's join the president now.
But while I know you have had differences with the Palestinian Authority, I genuinely believe that you do have a true partner in President Abbas and Prime Minister Fayyad. I believe that. And they have a track record to prove it. Over the last few years, they have built institutions and maintained security on the West Bank in ways that few could have imagined just a few years ago. So many Palestinians.
You have to understand the West Bank is Judea. What are you doing there anyway? That's Judea. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, carry the gospel, Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria. It's like, he's like saying, who would have even imagined that you would have given up Judea and then they who infiltrated your land are going to
be nice.
They did such a good job at it.
Right.
And the students who obviously don't understand that aspect of it or aren't concerned with, you know, God's view of the land.
Mm-hmm.
Are applauding the fact, that's right. No, that's your right arm. You're talking about, he said, right. Somebody took over your right arm. And so we want to get God's perspective of this. So when you hear about West Bank, that's Judea. That's Judea. Mm. And it's being, he said, the Palestinians, the president of the Palestinians has done a real good job taking over Judea. Mm. Right? And that's what he's saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Who would ever thought they would have been able to do something like that? Right. Question is, whoever thought Israel would have given up the West Bank? You know, it's such a small area anyway. But we're listening to the president's speech in Israel yesterday. Listen up.
Including young people have rejected violence as a means of achieving their aspirations. There is an opportunity there. There's a window. Which brings me to my third point. Peace is possible. It is possible.
This is what brings me to what I told you about. They cry peace, peace, and then sudden destruction. If this thing is just carried to the United Nations, and Israel submits to the United Nations, which Bibi Netanyahu, I mean, they're not gonna, I mean, they're not. Mm-mm. They know it.
No.
Yeah.
But we're finding out that, well, that means he's not for Israel. If you're going to carry me to the majority of my enemies who are going to vote against me, who proven it by their condemnations of all these other zero condemnations, practically these other nations, and 200 right. something over us with 46,000 deaths, and you had 2.5 million deaths, and you didn't bring any kind of, come on.
Exactly, come on.
And it's like, oh my goodness. I was so excited when it started, but now things are changing.
Mm-hmm.
Let's listen to the president. President in Israel yesterday.
I'm not saying it's guaranteed. I can't even say that it is more likely than not, but it is possible. I know it doesn't seem that way. There are always going to be reasons to avoid risk. There are costs for failure. There will always be extremists who provide an excuse not to act. I know there must be something exhausting about endless talks about talks and daily controversies and just the grinding status quo. And I'm sure there's a temptation just to say, enough. Let me focus on my small corner of the world and my family and my job and what I can control. But it's possible. Negotiations will be necessary, but there's a little secret about where they must lead. Two states for two peoples. Two states for two peoples.
And, of course, that has taken the West Bank, Judea, you know, cutting it off and giving it to Palestine or Palestinians. Mm-hmm. And, of course, that is how nations are going to be judged. That's Joel 3, chapter 3, verse 1 through 2. Listen up.
There will be differences about how to get there. There are going to be hard choices along the way. Arab states must adapt to a world that has changed. The days when they could condemn Israel to distract their people from a lack of opportunity or government corruption or mismanagement, those days need to be over. Now's the time for the Arab world to take steps towards normalizing relations with Israel.
So what do you think is going to happen to the United Nations? What are they going to do? They're going to do... That is who's
doing.
Yeah, that's exactly it. That is exactly it. Listen up. This is the president yesterday.
Meanwhile, Palestinians must recognize that Israel will be a Jewish state and that Israelis have the right to insist upon their security. Israelis must recognize that continued settlement activity is counterproductive to the cause of peace, and that it...
You have to understand what he's saying here. He's saying that if you continue to settle in your own land, if you continue to decide where you want to live in the land that God's given you, and now he's actually, though he acknowledged the Torah and the Dead Sea Scrolls, that now he's saying, but we're going to divide the land. We're going to divide the land. And
you setting camp there is not going to bring peace. You settling in your own land is not going to bring peace.
Right. And it's like, oh my goodness, we were so encouraged, we were so excited about what was being said, and it's just degrading. The speech is just kind of degrading and breaking apart, or the real deal is coming out. Listen up. This is the president speaking yesterday in Israel.
Independent Palestine must be viable with real borders that have to be drawn.
I do want to be able to listen to President Barack Obama's pastor, Reverend Wright, when he was talking about when the president came to meet him in his house, and he's talking about how to achieve objectives. And sometimes people feel like the end justifies the means. And this is Reverend Wright doing an interview as he's sharing about what happened when Reverend Wright, President Barack Obama's pastor, he's the one that married Michelle and Barack, married the president and his wife. And he spoke about him in his book, about how he mentored him. And now, when Reverend Wright was speaking his mind, and he's saying, you know, you need to tell the truth, whatever the truth was to Reverend Wright. But listen to this interview. It's just a short little interview. I'm trying to get the context of the speech, because how can he say both things? How can he say, and maybe the president's thinking the end justifies the means, you know, because if you are taking Israel to a voting bloc that's going to be against them, the same people that are on the other side of the border that you just said are their enemies, now you're going to take them to an organized meeting like Naboth and surround them by scoundrels in the United Nations. Who's going to take away Naboth's inheritance, right?
Yeah, his property, yeah.
His property. Let's listen to what President Barack Obama's pastor said, Reverend Wright.
The most profound thing he said to me that day, he said, you know what your problem is?
So what's my problem?
You have to tell the truth. I said, that's a good problem to have. Which is my point again. Politicians don't have to tell the truth. Truth is what we say it is.
And so it's like it kind of makes sense. It kind of makes sense in the context of that maybe if what Reverend Wright said was true, then maybe he has a goal in mind, and he thinks his goal can be worked out by saying what you need to say to be able to for the end. But understanding what we just heard about the United Nations, that's not going to the same thing's going to happen.
Sounds like flattery.
Yeah,
saying something which you would say, you know, the right thing in someone's face, but
right,
not really doing behind their back.
Exactly. And if that's true, what Reverend Wright's saying right there, then, and our concern is about this. It's not politics. It's the Israel. It's Israel, you know, which we value. And ever how goes Israel, so goes the church, by the way. And so it's very, very important. Let's join again the president speaking yesterday in Israel.
I've suggested principles on territory and security that I believe can be the basis for these talks. But for the moment, put aside the plans and the process. I ask you instead to think about what can be done to build trust between people. Now, 4 years ago, I stood in Cairo in front of an audience of young people. Politically, religiously, they must seem a world away. But the things they want, they're not so different from what the young people here want. They want the ability to make their own decisions and to get an education, to get a good job, to worship God in their own way, to get married, to raise a family. The same is true of those young Palestinians that I met with this morning. The same is true for young Palestinians who yearn for a better life in Gaza. That's where peace begins, not just in the plans of leaders, but in the hearts of people. Not just in some carefully designed process, but in the daily connections, that sense of empathy that takes place among those who live together in this land and in this sacred city of Jerusalem.
And it's like the methodology we're seeing take place in certain areas of the world is, let's just go for the young people who don't understand their history.
Yeah.
Let's tie into the, let's have, because they're not thinking anything historically, that it's just difficulty, all that kind of stuff. And let's have a non-religious world. If they are religious, let's minimize their role in society, and let's just be prosperous and peaceful, and the end of that is the destruction of Israel, you know, which is not going to happen. But that's the plot. Let's finish up and listen.
And let me say this as a politician. I can promise you this. Political leaders will never take risks if the people do not push them to take some risks. You must create the change that you want to see.
So he's saying you're going to have to lead the leaders. You have to understand, I'm a community organizer.
Wow.
And if you'll organize, these politicians will listen. Mm-hmm. He's doing the same thing there with Israel. Wow. But this is Israel. Right. You don't mess with mm-hmm. Israel. You just don't mess with Israel. And this is a moment you can go back and begin to listen to some of the prophetic things spoken here. And you're seeing us on a roller coaster because we're just hopeful as we're hearing him speak. And then it just kind of falls apart, or as we're hearing, you know, was Reverend Wright right?
Mm. Truly a defining moment.
A defining moment. He says, I'm speaking to you as a politician.
Mm.
And that's when, remember, when Reverend Wright was saying, you know, politicians, the truth is what they say it is.
Wow. Right.
What they say it is. Let's join the president speaking yesterday in Israel. And our concern here is about Israel. Israel.
Ordinary people can accomplish extraordinary things. I know this is possible. Look to the bridges being built in business and civil society by some of you here today. Look at the young people who've not yet learned a reason to mistrust, or those young people who've learned to overcome a legacy of mistrust that they inherited from their parents, because they simply recognize that we hold more hopes in common than fears that drive us apart. Your voices must be louder than those who would drown out hope. Your hopes must light the way forward. Look to a future in which Jews and Muslims and Christians can all live in peace and greater prosperity in this holy land. Believe in that.
Now, the one that wants to destroy you and push you in the sea, how are you ever going to live at peace with somebody who doesn't want? Because Israel's tried everything to live at peace, even given land up.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Isn't it amazing? Peace, 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 always peace,
mm-hmm.
peace. And then all of a sudden,
kaboom.
Suddenly. Listen up.
And most of all, look to the future that you want for your own children. A future in which a Jewish, democratic, vibrant state is protected and accepted for this time and for all time.
Can you imagine that you're the parents and you're sitting here watching this speech and he turns to your children and he says, listen, the only way your parents are going to ever do anything and accomplish anything is you're going to have to push them.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have to take over the household, and you're going to have to demand what you want from them.
Wow.
That's what he's saying to the young people. He's like, listen, the only way your leaders are going to ever do anything is you need to lead the leaders.
Wow.
Hello, Jay-Z, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay, we're listening to the president yesterday, and we're kind of sad now, as you can tell. Our voices are like, oh, my goodness. Listen up.
There will be many who say this is not possible, but remember this. Israel is the most powerful country in this region. Israel has the unshakable support of the most powerful country in the world.
Unless they go to the United Nations and submit to the leadership of the UN, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
And he's trying to take down the most powerful nation in the Middle East.
Mm.
I'm not saying he's trying to take it down. It seems like he's trying to take it to the United Nations. The United Nations,
right?
We'll take it down.
Set up.
Yeah, it seems like a set up.
Yeah,
it seems like.
Look at it. I mean, just look at the facts. This is not good.
No, it's not good at all. It's not good at all. But let's listen to the last part of his speech right here.
Israel's not going anywhere. Israel has the wisdom to see the world as it is, but...
This is true.
But this is in your nature. Israel also has the courage to see the world as it should be. You know, Ben-Gurion once said, in Israel, in order to be a realist, you must believe in miracles. Sometimes the greatest miracle is recognizing that the world can change. That's a lesson that the world has learned from the Jewish people. And that brings me to the final area that I'll focus on. Prosperity and Israel's broader role in the world. I know that all the talk about security and peace can sometimes seem to dominate the headlines, but that's not where people live. And every day, even amidst the threats that you face, Israelis are defining themselves by the opportunities that you're creating. Through talent and hard work, Israelis have put this small country at the forefront of the global economy. Israelis understand the value of education and have produced 10 Nobel laureates. Israelis understand the power of invention, and your universities educate engineers and inventors, and that spirit has led to economic growth and human progress. Solar power and electric cars, and bandages and prosthetic limbs that save lives, stem cell research and new drugs that treat disease, cell phones and computer technology that change the way people around the world live. So if people want to see the future of the world economy, they should look at Tel Aviv, home to hundreds of startups and research centers. Israelis are so active on social media that every day seem to bring a different Facebook campaign about where I should give this speech.
What you're saying is the sandwich approach. I'm going to tell you something really beautiful about you, something really great, get you all built up. Then I'm going to hit you with what I really want to tell you. And then I come back at the very end and tell you how wonderful and how great and how beautiful you are. And right. I'm just seeing a strategy unfold here. Look at
it's
this.
Just
this
sad.
Is like, come on.
It's just sad. I'm just very sad right now because the things the Lord's been showing us, you know?
Yeah.
Let's listen up.
That innovation is just as important to the relationship between the United States and Israel as our security cooperation. Our first free trade agreement in the world was reached with Israel nearly three decades ago. Today, the trade between our two countries is at $40 billion every year. More importantly, that partnership is creating new products and medical treatments. It's pushing new frontiers of science and exploration. That's the kind of relationship that Israel should have and could have with every country in the world. Already we see how that innovation could reshape this region.
Should have and could have. Oh, is that something?
Wow.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Let's listen to the last part of a speech.
There's a program here in Jerusalem that brings together young Israelis and Palestinians to learn vital skills in technology and business. An Israeli and Palestinian have started a venture capital fund to finance Palestinian startups. Over 100 high-tech companies have found home on the West Bank, which speaks to the talent and entrepreneurial spirit of the Palestinian people. You know, one of the great ironies of what's happening in the broader region is that so much of what people are yearning for, education, entrepreneurship, the ability to start a business without paying a bribe, the ability to connect to the global economy, those are things that can be found here in Israel. This should be a hub for thriving regional trade and an engine for opportunity. Israel's already a center for innovation that helps power the global economy. And I believe that all of that potential for prosperity can be enhanced with greater security, enhanced with lasting peace. Here, in this small strip of land that has been the center of so much of the world's history, so much triumph,
and so much tragedy. Israelis have built something that few could have imagined 65 years ago. Tomorrow I will pay tribute to that history. At the grave of Herzl, a man who had the foresight to see the future of the Jewish people had to be reconnected to their past. At the grave of Rabin, who understood that Israel's victories in war had to be followed by the battles for peace. At Yad Vashem, where the world is reminded of the cloud of evil that can descend on the Jewish people and all of humanity if we ever fail to be vigilant. We bear all that history on our shoulders. We carry all that history in our hearts. Today, as we face the twilight of Israel's founding generation.
The twilight of Israel's founding generation. Was Israel as we knew it is about to be over?
Wow.
And I'm talking to the next. Oh my goodness.
Wow.
Oh my goodness. Let's just finish this. Almost, it's almost, we're almost through.
You, the young people of Israel, must now claim its future. It falls to you to write the next chapter in the great story of this great nation. And as the president of a country that you can count on as your greatest friend, I am confident that you can help us find the promise in the days that lie ahead. And as a man who's been inspired in my own life by that timeless calling within the Jewish experience, Tikkun Olam, I am hopeful that we can draw upon what's best in ourselves to meet the challenges that will come, to win the battles for peace in the wake of so much war, and to do the work of repairing this world. That's your job. That's my job. That's the task of all of us. May God bless you. May God bless Israel. May God bless the United States of America. Toda Roba. Thank you.
You just listened to the President of the United States speaking yesterday in Israel to the young people at the campus there. And as you know, we're listening, we're just excited. We're hearing what he's saying. Yeah. And oh, this is like, wow, the acknowledgement and calling things what they are. But all of a sudden, it became about dividing the land and giving up the West Bank, which is Judea. Mm-hmm. It came about taking things, calling the present negotiations one-sided. So we need to take them to the United Nations as if the United Nations is not one-sided. But what we heard was the United Nations is so one-sided against Israel that it's got a whole voting block, an unstoppable voting block is what they call it. Mm. And so he's saying take Israel and this whole situation in the Middle East and carry it to the United Nations, which has an unstoppable voting block against Israel. And resolve it there, which that's unilateral. That's one side in there, United Nations. And so, sad to say, in regards to what would be God's perspective based on what we're hearing right now, if what he's saying is how he feels about it, and the president would know how the United Nations is set up, and that this is not good for Israel. And this is the young people. And then the final thing he says is, listen, you need to, as young people, you need to unite and become community organized, and you need to force Benjamin Netanyahu, who I just said I was friends with, force him to go the way I just told you.
Mm.
Did he not?
Yeah. Wave of revolution.
Join the wave of revolution.
Wow.
And which is the Guy Fawkes prophecy and all those things taking place.
All that coming together, converging.
So we just wanted to bring that to you. You can find out more.